not to attend Parliament should actually indicate that in us. And I must say we've had a couple from the ANC as well, the DA, the Freedom Plus, who's representing all minority parties, and they have a big responsibility, the Honourable Shabamu, and also IFC as well. But the IFC, I have to say, the only party that indicates there is not a committee meeting or 2013 work this year. Now, it takes us to make us probably to
propose the adoption of the agenda. Honourable Macpherson.
Chairperson, I'd just like to ask for an amendment to the agenda. I just wanted us to have a quick discussion around the steel crisis that's unfolding at a rapid rate at the moment. And I've got a whole lot of documents on our table to the committee. Just bring to your attention so we can just pass the way forward.
We know we are dealing with steel in August. Perhaps it wasn't you, but somebody did raise the steel issue a few weeks ago with the issue of tariffs and also the commodity pricing of cheap steel coming in from China. I think you did raise that. And one is aware that the minister is, has already attached tariffs to 10 lines to address that. You will recall 2-3 weeks ago, someone in the committee, I forget who, alerted the committee to this, those who were not alerted, and we certainly debated with the minister on the matter. Okay, he has done that. And that may well, that is the answer, but it should address a number of the issues. Yes, Honourable Members.
Okay, with all due respect, I don't think that we can wait until August, because the price increases continue unabated to downstream manufacturers, despite the statement by the Minister on the 5th of February that price increases would not take place, despite an agreement being published in August that no price increases would take place. There's been 4 this year. So with due respect, Arthur Mitchell continue to disregard the recommendations, the agreements, possibly even the instructions of the minister, which is hugely concerning. I've written to you a number of times. I haven't received response to that. I've written to the minister. I've written to IHAC asking them what their position is. They have not responded to it. And we now have a crisis on our hands where we're off the middle of increasing prices and companies are closing down because they can no longer continue on this footing. So,
give me a long time.
So I think it's exceptionally important that we have a quick discussion, that I table these documents to the committee, and that we do talk the way forward as to what's going to happen before we rise, because this must be dealt with before we rise.
We asked for that to be dealt with before we rose, and you folks all want the constituency leave. So let's not try that one. Honourable Hill Lewis.
Not sure what the constituency, but it wasn't us. But, Chairperson, I really support that proposal. If you look at the Quarterly Labour Force Survey released last week, in 3 months there's been more than 100,000 jobs lost in manufacturing, which would include primary steel manufacture, but also all of the downstream manufacturing industries that use steel. It's absolutely a huge crisis that cannot wait until August, by which time it's quite possible that another 100,000 or more jobs could have been lost in the industry. I really do believe and support the proposal that we discussed briefly today and add it to our agenda for urgent discussion with the Minister before we rise.
See, the Honourable Hill Lewis, I am going to address this. At one point in time, both of you were not here, but we had the opportunity to. We finished meetings at 11:30, 12:30. And so, when it suits you to be in Parliament, then there's time. And I do appeal to all of you to realise that. Yes, Honourable Nkongi?
No, thank you very much. is the DAU was requesting the chairperson to consider adding this point to the agenda. I thought that was new, but the intention. And now, the chairperson is sharing the meeting, and the chairperson does not agree with that proposal. He's saying that we have been discussing the matter and we took decision on the proposal. So therefore, that proposal must fall off. What is happening now, the DA is arguing the point. The point is not on the agenda. It's arguing the point, motivating the point, which is indiscipline. Because the matter is not on the agenda. Secondly, Mr. President, I don't want to look like a populist in this term. If ANC that rose concerns on the matters of the steel crisis in South Africa, we had the colloquians here speaking directly on the question of the prices that the steel, big steel industries are selling to downstream manufacturing. We propose the development countries in terms of the prices. The DA voted against that thing that must help the downstream manufacturing in steel on the 10%. They rejected that. We debated it in that particular house. And now they're coming here to grandstand and be populist on the matter. We told them a year ago. Now they're thinking that they're going to be masters of transformation. The matter is in the hands of the department and the minister of the industry. I could hear if they propose that we might have a special meeting next week where the minister can brief us on the progress. You can't put it on the agenda. Now, no. Maybe you don't know English or they're white. You propose to amend the agenda. The chairperson is saying to you, we can't amend this agenda. This issue is being processed. They are contesting that. They are an African who knows English more than white man.
It's not the sound speech. Now, but I'm saying, you weren't here one day yourself, Honourable Mkongi, when the issue came up as to what critical things we could put on the agenda. And one of the critical things that we are able to put on the agenda is outstanding issues that could not wait until the 16th of August. And we do know Mr. Strachan, DDG, is coming here next week. And but some of you were not here at the time to get that information. So let's hold our horses. He's not just coming on that per se. All right. So I'm not going to take another hand on the agenda. I'm not. No, I am not taking it. I'm not taking another hand because I've decided if the agreement of the majority will hold a vote, I want the agenda to stand as is. The matter of steel has come up several times. On occasions you have been here, on occasions you haven't. And something has been done. So I'm not going to run a debate right now. Yes, we'll come to the meeting. Right. So I'm going to ask someone to propose the adoption of the agenda.
Sorry, Chairperson. With due respect, it's not... Let's put it to a vote then.
Deputy, I move for the adoption of the agenda.
And we have a seconder.
Chairperson, with due respect, this is a democracy. It's not for you to unilaterally decide what the agenda will be. This is a multi-party
committee. No, Honourable McNamara.
It's not for you to decide how this committee will be run. It is for the members of this committee to be run. And if we put something as a proposal...
No, Honourable Mkongi, please don't run a dialogue now. Please. We'll go over the programme of next week again so that you, those who were away last week are fully aware of what is on the agenda. Some of the changes MANCO has made yesterday to accommodate certain things and the fact that we're only coming back, it would appear, on the 16th, which is why we have changed things. I'm not going to take that right now.
It's not on the agenda.
Brian, thank you.
Yeah, I would just like if you could just send us a letter in writing with the dates of meetings that you allege that Mr. McPherson and I were not present, because I can recall two meetings in this entire Fifth Parliament where Mr. Topham, our designated alternate, has attended the meeting, because neither of us could be here, and neither of those two meetings were recently. So I dispute the allegation that you have made here publicly that there have been meetings where neither of the DA reps have been present, and I'd like you to provide the dates of those meetings in writing to me, please.
I think you're aware of that. We passed we actually turned down the desirability of your bill. You left immediately afterwards.
Yes, I was here for that.
And Honourable McPherson was not here for an extended time with a valid apology. So you are aware of that. So it's not the main things you're aware of.
If you could just send me the dates in writing, please.
I'm not giving them to you in writing. You know you weren't here. Right.
Excuse me, madam. I do not know I was not here. There was no meeting.
Then we now go on to the briefing by the National Consumer Tribunal on matters referred to them by the NCR.
Chairperson?
Is it yourself, Mr. Blanche? Yes.
Madam Chair? Okay, I'll just like to place the record. It's a...
I have already recognized someone else. Thank you.
It's unacceptable for you to make allegations on the record without substantiating them.
Sure. Good morning, Honourable Chairperson Tubbs, honourable members of the Portfolio Committee for the Department of Trade and Industry, fellow colleagues from the DTI, from the National Consumer Commission, and the National Credit Regulator. It is a pleasure for us to be here today. My name is Diantha Blanche. I'm the Executive Chairperson of the National Consumer Tribunal. With me today is Mrs. Manali Sposh, to my right. She is our Chief Operations Officer. Directly behind me are two of our full-time tribunal members, and they are here because they are directly overseeing our cases, Mrs. Leveraj, our matters that doesn't relate to decree arrangement matters, and Advocate John Simpson overseeing our debt rearrangement matters. And then behind them Mr. Prinesen Woodley, he's the acting registrar, and Mr. Max Nomvede, he is our ICT manager, because of the IDT interventions also that we bring to bear on our cases and our case management. I will not be presenting the presentation that you have in front of you today. That will be done by our Chief Operations Officer, Ms. Marlies Bosch. But from my side, I just wanted to make a few introductory remarks in relation to the National Consumer Tribunal. I want to just make a few remarks in respect of what the past year, and Ms. Bosch will get into the previous years, has been for the NCT. And overall speaking, I must say from our perspective, 2015-16 has both been quite rewarding and challenging for the National Consumer Tribunal. It's been rewarding because we've seen an increase in our case numbers and type, the complexity of cases filed with us, and that shows us that we've been able to extend our services, which is adjudication to regulators and consumers. We've also been able to increase access to our services through, for example, holding motion courts in different provinces for debt rearrangement matters, and we've been able to link up parties to participate in our cases through ICT interventions. We've been able to take up also the increased mandate to the tribunal in terms of the National Credit Amendment Act that came into operation in March of 2015. We have also seen a development of our case management system, very importantly, within consultation with relevant filing parties, and we've been able to test that within a testing environment, before going live on our system with those relevant fine parties, and we are working with them on further modules to be developed, we have been able to harness and implement rule changes to the National Consumer Tribunal rules that makes it easy and cheaper for parties to access our services in respect of how they can serve and file papers in their cases to bring to the tribunal, and also in terms of our efficiencies because we are no longer compelled to do assessments for complete filings for all the matters, but only where there are cost implications. We have been able to increase the jurisdiction precedent and certainty on the interpretation of consumer and credit legislation through our judgments, and our judgments have been upheld on appeal in 10 out of 11 out of 12 matters that have been brought on appeal. We've had regular strategic interventions with our filing parties. It enabled us to be more responsive to their concerns with the MCT service delivery issues, of which we had quite a few concerns raised with us during the past year. Matters brought to our attention by the NCR, by other filing parties, and we have been able to engage and interact with them and to remedy the situation to some extent, even though to this point not fully. We've also been seeing parties exercising their rights in terms of the South African Constitution, the Public Administration of Justice Act, National Credit Act, and the rules before the tribunal, and for the tribunal to be sure that they are fair in our adjudication of these matters before us. We've managed to operate within our allocated budget because of interventions we've put in place, mainly around ICT, scheduling of cases, scheduling cases per tribunal members, as well as maintaining a clean administration with a clean audit for a third year in a row, no internal or external audit findings over the past year. Which is quite a feat in terms of what we have seen in the increase in our cases. Debt rearrangement matters have increased at a tremendous pace. It's an indication of the economic situation in the country, that consumers are extremely debt-stressed, and also because of the increased uptake of our services. In terms of the matters that don't relate to debt rearrangement matters, prohibited conduct matters, we have definitely seen the increase in the numbers and complexity, and that I must say relate mainly to the NCR, the National Credit Regulator, the aggressive update of its increased mandate to prosecute, for example, reckless credit matters, illegal charges to consumers and so on. And then we have also seen that we have quite a number of cases before the tribunal by unrepresented parties. In fact, the largest portion of our cases before the tribunal are matters referred to us by consumers directly and by regulated entities such as the debt counselors. I will not...
You, please, if you're going to use the screen, can you shift it along?
Yeah, I'm so sorry. It was just a few introductory remarks.
Folks don't have it.
Yeah, I'm so sorry about that, Chairperson. I will hand over to Ms. Bosch to take you through the full presentation. Thank you.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members, colleagues from DCI, the NCR and ACC. I'm Marilise Bosch. I'm the Chief Operating Officer of the Tribunal. And so, in terms of our presentation, we thought it's just to maybe start with an overview of some acronyms. I'm not going to go through them specifically. They're just more there for referral purposes as we use them along in the presentation. Some of the, and then just to start with some of the important terms that we use as technical, terms in our environment, just to also help with a bit of understanding as we go through the presentation. When we allocate, it is basically to either a matter, to either, depending on the type of matter, to either a single member or a three member tribunal panel for hearing and requirements for allocation set in the National Credit Act. Close of freedoms, which I'm going to refer to a bit later when we talk about turnarounds, is quite an important term in our environment. because that signals to parties that the set period of time between complete filing and your matter reach all the filing requirements and the period for parties to file your answer and your replying affidavit has basically ended and the matter is ready to be allocated to pleadings for hearing. I'm also not going to go through all of the terms as such. It's, again, there's just to provide some understanding. I might refer back to it as we go into the specific presentation. Right, so I'm going to move on. An important term is what we require is a DRA, which is a debt rearrangement application. These are matters that is brought by debt counselors on behalf of consumers to rearrange the consumer's credit agreement obligations. When we look at an increase in our own environment, the majority of the cases or the majority of our increase have been related to the types of cases. Even though there's agreement between the debt counselor and the credit provider and the consumer in relation to the obligations of a consumer, it's still very important for the tribunal to interrogate these matters. Because often they may contain, for example, illegal interest rates, instances where a consumer did not in fact agree to what is put forward, that amounts that must be paid may be in excess of what a consumer can afford. For example, not all the credit providers have consented to the agreement put forward in the debt rearrangement application, to name a number of the issues that the tribunal must consider there. And of course, it's important in our environment that there must be consent between all the parties, because if it is not consent, we as a fact do not have jurisdiction to look at that debt rearrangement. It must then go to a court. Non-debt rearrangement matter is a term that we use to refer to all the matters that can be filed at the tribunal, excluding debt rearrangement applications. So it's a big grouping where basically all the matters that must be heard by the tribunal that require a hearing, in most instances these would be a three-member tribunal panel matter and it requires a formal hearing. We include here the approximately 33 types of credit conduct in terms of the National Credit Act and the 34 types of applications that can be brought. I've listed some examples there of these. These would be the referrals by regulator and so forth, as well as, for example, consumers who can come to us directly to review sales of goods, resolve disputed entries on these statements, or in instances where they've been to a regulator and the regulator is not taking them forward, that can then also come to us directly with those matters. It also includes the approximately 99 prohibited conduct applications that can be filed in terms of the Consumer Protection Act. These would be some of the issues that we've considered are, for example, issues of quality of services, goods, warranties offered on repaired goods. These matters are often quite complex, involving new legislation and without parents or presence. So far, most of the work that the tribunal has done on the Consumer Protection Act came from matters referred to us directly by consumers where they've received a non-referral notice. Then I'm going to come back to this slide a bit later on in my presentation. That's just to show to the committee, basically, if one look at our initial non-debt rearrangement matters specifically, the filing parties, to show that if we look, and this is specifically in relation to filings we received in 2015-16. So during that year, we've received 55 filings from the NCR. We've received one filing from the NCC, upping their filings to us for two cases. And then from other parties, we've received 137 cases. These would be, and that's why I said when I talk about the other filing parties, you'll see that actually the predominant part of our filers, and they are often unrepresented consumers. So I'm going to come back a little bit later to the specific delays that we've experienced in our cases, but in essence, on the case management side, our caseload has increased quite a bit. Towards the end of the previous financial year, we were at approximately 800 cases in 7 months. That increase, it doubled to almost 600 cases during 2015-16. We've addressed this, as I'll come to a bit later, mostly through driving of set-downs aggressively forward, setting up a motion course, looking at process changes, We've also had some teething issues with the implementation of our case management system. That then, of course, led to us having to really relook at case management processes and some instances to attend to some reprogramming on our system. We've also, as I've indicated, issues with motion calls. Some of the other issues that, we have experienced in this year from a challenge perspective is that, as the chair also indicated in opening remarks, that we've had some interactions with our filing parties about, for example, where we had differences about implementation, about how to do some of the assessments in relation to the filing requirement. Most of this has been resolved. We had some issues with our reporting, and so forth. I'm going to deal with challenges a bit more in detail later on in my presentation. So I'm going to go, of course, if one then look at the KPIs we set for ourselves, the question can be asked, but how did it come about, the KPIs in relation to our turnarounds? At the establishment of the tribunal, we conducted some benchmarking, specifically in Australia and New Zealand. We found that these regulatory bodies dealt with a wide range of matters. For example, they dealt with both competition and consumer matters, and that there were no entities that were specifically similar to the NCT, to our entity, that we could identify with in order to determine the benchmark. We have, accordingly, in relation to turnarounds and what we deem to be acceptable turnarounds, have set our own KPIs around that, with the provision then that year on year we will improve on the turnarounds. Now, you will see that over the years our KPI has remained quite stable, but that has taken into account the significant increase in the number of cases. So you have to almost run faster to stay at the same place, so to speak. Going forward, we will be doing some research again to see perhaps, you know, more recently there might be some entities that we can benchmark against and also considering a peer review. Okay. Then this slide basically represents the tribunal over the past, I'm going to say, 3 years or so. The top line, the dark blue line, represents our caseload. And as the members will see, there's been quite a significant steep increase in the number of cases from the tribunal. The bottom three lines represent, on the one hand, our staff on our structure, our tribunal members, and then our financial resources, which have remained divorce-like stable. So specifically, if we look at 2015-16, we've received 19,097 cases, which is a 99.16% increase from the 9,589 cases we received during 2014-15. Over a three-year period, our caseload is almost quadrupled, whereas our financial resources increased by 12.93% on average year on year. Staff complements increased from 38 to 41 employees on the structure, and our tribunal members increased from 11 to 13 with the appointment of our full-time tribunal members. A bit more about our staffing. If we look at our current staffing, the male-female composition of the tribunal is 62% female, 38% male. If we look at point equity, that's the graph on the right, 69% African, 3% colored, 12.5% Indian, and 15.5% white. When we look at our future staffing, and as we go through the slides and look at the challenges and things that we are facing, this will become quite evident. With our caseload increase, we will have to consider obtaining additional resources. At this stage, it's not yet certain whether it would have to be permanent resources as opposed to contract resources. We're still establishing where exactly we would need to go with our resources. It is, however, necessary because the strain our caseload is placing on our staff is being quite severe, which can then, of course, result in staffing complaints. What we will be doing is to look at a review of our HR practices within the tribunal. We have established a staff forum, and we have continuous engagements with our staff to, in the interim, try and manage these types of issues. We've also raised with DPI the possibility, and they're considering that, to look at possibly getting retired judges on board as additional part-time tribunal members to help us on the adjudication side of our matters. OK,
If we look at our financial resources and the costs involved in adjudicating on our cases, a debt arrangement that is average cost works at about, and if this is not only if we look at tribunal fees, 172 rand per matter. That's normally a case where this one tribunal member will deal with a debt arrangement matter. And in terms of our parent figures, a tribunal member can do 32 of these in a day. If we look at our non-debt arrangement matters, these are quite much more expensive and resource intensive. It also takes a longer period of time to deal with. Ordinarily, there will be two tribunal members on a case. Cost, and this is solely tribunal member fees, is about 38,500. And that is 7 tribunal days. Not because 3 members that would pay for one day, members that will hear a matter for one day, and then one member that will finalize a decision. If I might get to the 7 days. So the cost of one non-debt arrangement matter equals to the cost of 224 debt arrangement matters in relation to tribunal member fees. Then the parties would appear before the tribunal. It's the regulators, consumers, service providers, and then registrants in terms of the acts. Okay. If we look at the 19,000 to 97 cases that we received during 2015-16, these are broken down into 18,901 debt rearrangement applications, 193 non-debt rearrangement applications, and 3 other matters would be, for example, where parties actually filed an inquiry that didn't result in the case of the tribunal, we referred them, for example, to a regulator. Then, as I said, if we look at the specifics there on the slide, per filing matters, if you will see that the biggest group of files is the other filing parties, which are 137 matters, NCR 30 cases, and NC1. And these were specifically filed during 2015-16. If I break that down a little bit further in terms of the relevant acts, 168 of the applications that you received was in terms of the National Credit Act, 24 cases was in terms of the Consumer Protection Act, and one matter was an application filed in terms of our rules. Now, what is important to see on this slide is, if you look, for example, at the green block, which is just above the yellow on the line on the left, and at the bottom of the CPA slide, these are matters that are non-referrals that are filed directly with the tribunal by consumers. So those would be instances where they then went to a regulator, they received their notice on referral, and they come to us. From a time and resource perspective, these matters can be quite intensive because the consumers, because they are not represented, the tribunal has to assist them in filing and bringing the right documents and application and at the hearing, assisting them to put their cases forward. Okay. Now, currently, the tribunal has 11,091 matters that are not yet finalized or pending. Of these, 10,965, which are debt arrangement matters, we consider as a backlog, which largely was due to inaccurate information flows, which we've addressed through increased executive oversight and disciplinary action, which is ongoing. Of that backlog of 10,955 debt arrangement matters, 1,187 of them were filed prior to 2016. We've requested debt counsels also to verify with us in relation to these matters on which ones they still require orders, because what we've seen on the motion court, in some instances we will have matters that indicate we need to deal with them, and then the consumer might, for example, have withdrawn from the DTV process or whatever the case may be. So we are busy verifying our older numbers to ensure that we actually focus our attention on those matters that require orders. If we look at the 156 current non-debt arrangement matters, so that's pending matters, 31 of them was filed with us before 2015-16. 115 was filed during 2015-16, and 10 was filed after 2015-16. So that's the 10 newest matters from 1 April 2016 onwards. I did a bit of a breakdown on that 31 matters that comes from before 2015-16, and they basically span a period of 10 of them that comes from the year 2012-13. These 10 matters, one of them,
basically is a matter that we need to hold over because it's currently in the High Court, so we're waiting for an outcome from a High Court decision. The other 9 matters is matters that we also cannot take forward because they've been affected by another decision that we made that required them to be withdrawn. All right. 4 matters come from the 2013-14 financial year. Of them, 2 we are holding over due to High Court applications. 1 matter has been set down for hearing. The other matter went through a recent pre-hearing in terms of which set down dates have been agreed. So those 2 are still going through the process. And 17 of these 31 relate to the 2014-15 financial year. 1 of them has been postponed at the hearing. 4 we are holding over due to High Court applications. 3 we've already heard, we basically just a judgment that needs to come out. 1 matter, we had a pre-hearing decision that's outstanding. 1 of them is still incomplete. 2 matters are going through a condemnation application, and 4 matters have to be set down for hearing, so they have hearing dates in the near future. Just to get to the term incomplete, because I didn't explain that seriously, we regard a matter as incomplete if not all the documents have been filed. That is required for the, in terms of the filing requirements set for that type of matter. Now, what often happens, and that's especially where unrepresented consumers, for example, file with us, they will try a few times to meet the filing requirements. So they will file, we will assess the filing, we will explain to them what are the issue of the filing. They might, in the next filing, only give some of the documents required, then we'll go through that process with them until the matter has all the documents necessary for the filing to be completed. Now, just in relation to turn around on that 31 matters, if I include basically all those matters, whether they are being held over because of a High Court decision or not, turn around on them is 543 days from filing, 478 days from close of pleadings. If I exclude the matters that is basically standing still out of the control of the tribunal, those matters that need to be withdrawn and the matters that are standing over because of High Court applications, the turnaround includes the 381 days from filing, 242 days from close of pleadings. If we look at the DRAs that have been filed before 2015-16, the figure I have there is 279 days from filing. However, as I said, this is subject to our verification exercise. Okay. During 2015-16, we've issued 10,826 orders on debt arrangement applications. Majority of these went from motion courts with great success. What we've also changed in our process, where we previously used to assess debt arrangement matches for their filing requirements outside of the education process, we've now moved that together into one process. And as a result of our motion courts and these other interventions that we put in place, our turnaround in relation to dealing with these matters average improved from more than 85 days to 56.45 days. Overall, for 2015-16, our turnaround in dealing with declaration applications was an average 73 days. And what we then will have to do here, because we've made changes to our process, we will be requesting DTI to make some amendments to our KPI in our APP in relation to these matters. As I've indicated previously, the assessment for the filing requirements in terms of debt arrangement matters was removed from the adjudication process. So we track the time from the complete filing to when we adjudicate, give the order. However, because we've now moved those 2 steps into one, going forward we will track the measure from date of filing with the tribunal until date of issuing of the order. We have received very positive feedback from filing parties in relation to our motion court process specifically. They've indicated to us that, basically a lot of the service delivery issues that they've experienced have been cleared as a result of this process. If we looked at our finalized non-debtor arrangement applications between 2015-16, we finalized 132 matters. Of the 132 matters that we finalized, 76 of them were filed during 2015-16 and 56 were filed before 2015-16. And then how exactly we finalized them is 48.5% were finalized due to lapsing, which were matters that even after we assessed them against the filing requirements and provided the relevant notices to the filing parties, they did not provide all the necessary documents to make them ready for adjudication. 13% of the matters were withdrawn by the parties. 1.5% condemnation was refused, This would be where a party applies to the tribunal to file the application with the tribunal outside of the permitted time as set in the International Credit Act. And then, considering that application, the tribunal then came to the conclusion that for specific reasons that accommodation should not be allowed. Two settlement were also confirmed, which is 1.5%, and in 33.5% of our matters, we've issued judgments. And then after 2015 sitting, there was also further matter that was finalized. Okay, then if we look,
and we just remind you, you've got the most 20 minutes left, 15, 20.
Thank you, sir. I've been going to just hurry up a little bit. If we specifically then look at the National Credit Regulators cases, we have 79 current cases, which are cases that are not finalized, filed with us by regulator. We have finalized 24 of regulators' matters within 2015-16, and we finalized one matter post 2015-16. If we look at the current matters, that's 79, 26 of them predate 2015-16, 51 was filed during 2015-16, and 2 was filed after 2015-16. All right, if we look at those matters that were filed before 2015-16, as I said, one of them is undergoing a condemnation process, 9 we're waiting for withdrawals, 3 matters are in the sit-down process, 1 matter was postponed at the hearing, and 7 of these matters are being held in abeyance due to high court applications or courageous appointment. So these matters are the knuckles matters that we cannot move forward, and 5 matters, there are judgments outstanding. It includes a decision on a pre-hearing and a point of law. I then analyzed that 26 matters from 2015-16 a little bit further on the next slide, where we indicate 10 matters filed during 2012-13, what these cases are. Those 10 matters are matters that the tribunal cannot move forward. 10 matters filed during 2013-14, of that 10, there are 5 matters that we cannot move forward due to high school applications, and then the other 5, 2 have been set down. There's 1 judgment, 1 pre-hearing ruling, and a ruling on a point of law. And 6 matters that were filed during 2014-15, one of them is being held in abeyance due to high court application, one is for a condemnation in process, one matter is set down for hearing, and one matter postponed at a hearing, and 2 judgments outstanding. I can set the status there of the matters filed within 2015-16, where they are in terms of our relevant processes, and as you will note from this slide, the majority of the matters are basically from between the stage of where the meetings have closed and we can now allocate them for the hearing and the date being set down with hearing date. Alright, 37 of the 51 current matters that was filed in 2015-16 by NCR was filed with us here in Court of 4. Then if I look at the 24 matters that we finalized for NCR during 2015-16, our average turnaround from those of feelings there was 186.48 days and 232 days from date of filing. And in this turnaround, I've included all the NCR cases that have been finalized, regardless of whether or not there was postponements or condemnations or whatever the case may be. But after 1 April, we've also had 2 further NCR settlements confirmed. Okay, now, if we look at this, is quite important if we look at our turnaround on the NCR cases. Our average turnaround on our cases for NCR, where there's no postponements, condemnation applications, or matters that are being held over due to high court applications and so forth, is 35 days, all right, from filing, and 12.25 days from close of pleading. This is 29 of NCR's matters, and all 29 of these matters have been filed between February 2015 and April 2016. I put a slide there just to show what our normal case process would look like. That is a case process where there's no, basically everybody in the process does exactly what they should be doing on the relevant times. From filing until then, the judgment issue, we estimate it will take about 175 days. Then, if there is an interlocutory application, which is something like, for example, a condemnation application that tribunal must consider, that will add an additional 65 days to that process with per application. which would then mean that, for example, if the respondent filed these documents late and there needs to be a condemnation process that's 135 days, there might be a, the other party might require an amendment to their papers that would add another number of days to an application. So, and why this is also relevant is that if we look at matters that are affected by postponement condemnations being held over due to high court matters or waiting withdrawals, which is 50 of the 79 matters, that turnaround goes to 358 days from filing and 289 days from close of pleadings. If I exclude the matters that must be withdrawn, the turnaround is then 256 days from matters where the postponement condemnation allegations hold over due to high court and 174 days from close of pleadings, which will be 41 of the 50 matters. And these timelines then only basically accords to as the process shows with a condemnation. So as I indicated, 2015 sitting was very challenging for us. We experienced four main challenges. Firstly, our case load over exploded. We had serious management issues in dealing with our cases. There were a number of instances where parties took procedural steps which are out of our control, which then of course include our turnarounds. As I've explained, we've also had some case management issues. Some incidents we didn't do our sit-downs quickly enough, and this can also be evidenced by our understanding tribunal member fees. There were some delays in some of our judgment reviews and issuing. In some instances, we did do inaccurate assessments of our non-legally arrangement matters. In instances, we had a long delay in assessing our DRAs. We've implemented a new system in this year. Where we also had some teething issues and user adoption issues with this implementation. And all of these factors combined basically resulted in the tribunal struggling to attain and sustain our expected level of service delivery. And if our caseload continues to increase as it has done over the past 3 years, it may ultimately compromise the tribunal in achieving all of the targets that we set in our AMP. However, we are addressing our challenges. If one talks about the upsurge in the caseload, specifically the impact on our budget, we've addressed this by increasing the number of debt rearrangement cases that our tribunal members must deal with per day. We are currently on 32. Through the years, that went up from approximately, we started 1 a day up to 8 a day. We now do 32 a day. We distribute our case files using remote desktop services. We have continuous motion courts. We have a number of ICT interventions that we've put in place to assist with reducing costs, and in relation to the non-debtory arrangement matters where possible, we set up more than one matter a day. We can even set up to three matters if we estimate that it will be, we would be able to deal with the matter in a few hours. In looking at the impact that our case has had on our expedition and accessible adjudication, then we have our continuous motion courts. We've requested for additional tribunal members. We are re-looking our staffing structure to get more additional administrative personnel so that we can also have, for example, more motion courts simultaneously in more venues, and then, of course, ICT interventions. Now, to continuously address the challenges that we will be facing due to our caseload, we will have to look at additional human resources. As I indicated, additional administrative personnel as well as additional tribunal members. And this would also be necessary to reduce the strain that is being experienced by our current staff and tribunal members as a result of the demand for our services exceeding our current capacity. Our second challenge that we faced was serious management issues. In relation to these, we've basically taken two main sets. On the one hand, we've taken disciplinary action, and this is still currently ongoing. On the other hand, we've enhanced oversight over the management of our cases, and this will continue in conjunction with our acting registrar until the finalization of our disciplinary processes. In relation to the challenge that we have with parties taking procedural steps outside of our control, the tribunal must act in accordance with the principles of natural justice, and as such, the challenge is unavoidable. But what we do is each one of these applications are considered by the tribunal to ensure that only those applications of merit that should be allowed are allowed, and that cases that do not have merit, you know, these applications, are then dismissed, not to cause unnecessary delays.
As I've also indicated earlier on, we've had a number of case management challenges. This has been addressed by enhanced oversight of our case management steps. We do continuous training for employees in respect of our case processes. We're looking at additional resources to reduce the strain on employees, resulting in necessary errors. We have regular interaction with our stakeholders, and we will also be looking at putting greater emphasis on change management in implementing additions to our case management system. Okay, highlights and achievements. That is the map of South Africa, some places where we've had our motion courts to date. We will be going to all the provinces with the motion courts. So that's just from the time that we've implemented this intervention where we've been, and as I said, going forward, basically at least two weeks out of every month, we will be having motion courts. I gave some information about our motion courts, which I'm going to just skip over. Of course, another highlight for us is that the high quality of our decisions has been retained despite this upswing in our caseload, and specifically that of the 11 appeals and reviews that have been filed to date, only one instance we've been overturned in the onset of our judicative mandate, and that we were again recently in March upheld in the High Court. Then we also participate in the African Dialogue Forum, which is a regional forum for the African countries, and we will be hosting later in this year the 2016 International Conference. Okay, then just in relation to the budget slides, and this is basically the end of the presentation, at our previous briefing here earlier in April, our CFO went into detail into the budget slides, so we've added into this presentation for the sake of completeness, but I'm not going to deal with them in detail. I think it suffices to say that because of these interventions that we've put in place, in our view, our financial resources in respect of 2016-17 and 2017-18 should be sufficient despite the current increase in our caseload. It is to be noted, however, that if the caseload, being very unpredictable, increases again as we've experienced over the past 3 years, in other words, quadruple, we will then experience difficulty in achieving our mandate within our allocated resources. All right, and then just as a last note, our judgments are available on our website and on SATI, and then our contact details.
Very accessible. Have you someone present in your office?
Yes.
No problems.
Well. We are reviewing our website again, but I mean that's a continuous thing that we do.
Yeah, I'm just going to have another look at that, all right? But let me allow Mr. Blanche to add anything if she wishes, or the rest of the team. And following that, then if we can have, will you be wanting to make a comment, Mr. Nancy Kinsey?
Madam Chair, with your permission, I just want to go back to the slide on 358 days for matters where there are postponements and so on. That's an average across all the cases. Now, of course, there are cases with a much longer turnaround within the matters that we are dealing with for the NCR, and we just wanted to take an opportunity just to look at those quite quickly and give the committee an idea about which of those cases are the ones that have taken very long and why, and what we are doing around that. The COO is just putting that up on the screen. Madam Chair, with your permission.
In relation to those cases, what we've seen, and that's, you know, I think that's the one that also the problem with an average turnaround, in some instances, some matters can really also pull these figures. If I look at the, and I'm not first just going to put it into categories as such,
That is that where we, the nine matters where we were waiting on withdrawals, turnaround on those matters are, well, if we look from date of filing is 820 days, from close pleading is 803 days. And that is why I excluded them also from when I recasted that figure. If we look at matters that have been affected by condemnations, turnaround there is 154 days from filing, 58 from close of pleadings. Matters that have been affected by, for example, a condemnation and amendment of papers, 412 days from filing, 27 days from close of pleadings. If I look at the matters that have been that are held in abeyance in the High Court, turnaround there is 447 days from filing, 406 days from close of pleadings. And then, of course, there are some matters that have been affected by, for example, postponement and amendment. That's 244 days from filing, 129 days from close of pleading. If I look at... There were two specific matters that basically it's got a bit long turnaround, and that is basically due to one can say only tribunal challenges and shortcomings in our case process. One of these matters was a matter that came from the 2012-13 year, which when we did the carryover from the 1 year to the other year, somehow it fell off of our carry forward figure. So there was quite a long delay in that specific matter. Until we received a query about it, and then we realized we had the file that didn't go through our processes. Another matter was a matter where we requested parties to file additional documents. They filed the documents, and the file with the documents were basically not dealt with again as such.
Is that confidential, or can you share that with the committee?
We have a detailed report that we shared with the NCR. It is really the detail on the cases. I don't think there's really confidentiality. It's really operational documentation.
So I'm asking is because you said it took such a long time, and maybe perhaps they complained as well. You know what I mean? I don't know.
It's the one matter there was the Hewitt matter, which was a deregistration of a debt counter matter, and the other one was a deregistration of a care provider matter, a forum asset rating.
Madam Chair, just to say that these are the matters also that the NCR raised with us, which alerted us to the problem within the carry forward of the cases, and when we meet with them regularly, and then they alert us to specific issues that they have with how we manage their cases, and this came out of those discussions. The issues around inaccurate assessments, which also extended the life of some cases unexceptionally or unacceptably related to a disagreement we had around what constitutes a complete filing. With the NCR filing papers with us, and some of the pages of those papers were illegible, and we then rendered it incomplete. We had discussions with the NCR, and they said legible documentation is not an issue for complete filing. It's not as such a filing requirement, though they accepted, and we then came to an agreement that they will basically exclude those papers for the party's consideration during the adjudication process. And those matters, as a result, were only rendered complete almost 8 months after they were filed initially with the tribunal, and that then extended the period of those cases. Those were also an issue that we experienced.
Thank you very much. Mr. Nancy Kinsey, please, DDG.
Thanks, Chair and Honourable Members. My contribution is only to an extent that whenever we talk about regulations, sometimes those regulations include rules of the tribunal in order to facilitate matters to be completed speedily. So the other issue is that when those rules are issued, we encourage education and awareness amongst practitioners so that issues should not be delayed or be withdrawn because of not knowing which rules have been amended. So that is our contribution to the tribunal.
Thank you very much. Now, we're going to, and thank you to yourself then, both Mrs. De Blanche as well as Ms. Bosch, so thank you. Thank you, go through, and because this issue has come up several times, we really need to dig a bit deeper. After we discussed it, as for a bit of a tea break after we've spoken. Thank you, Honourable McPherson. Did you also have your hand up, or just shall I take your colleague? Honourable Hill Lewis, Honourable Williams, Honourable Grunhoff, Honourable McPherson. Right, maximum this time, 44 minutes.
Thank you very much to Mr. Blanche and was it Ms. Bosch for the presentation. I completely understand the very serious constraints that you work under and the huge explosion in the caseload that you have to deal with. But you must also understand our extreme frustration that there are examples where consumers are persistently still to this day being ripped off on a daily basis. And have no one really to protect them. They don't have the ability to go to the courts. It's far too expensive. And you are the body that is supposed to act as their defender. And when it takes literally years for you to hear cases, I'm not talking about DOA cases. I'm talking about those big kind of industry-wide, almost sort of class action cases. When it takes years for those to be heard, they are left vulnerable all the time. And so, you know, what we had originally asked for, actually, and I understand there's a lot of cases, but a detailed breakdown of some of the big cases that we've been inquiring about for a long time. I think, for example, of the Holiday Club cases, and then obviously the big NCR cases as well, against Africa Bank, against Lewis, and there might be some other furniture retailers there as well. Irene's might still be there, even though that company is now defunct. That's the first thing. The second thing is your website was last updated in August 2014. So the cases and practices and judgments on that website are very, very old. I presume you've issued a lot since, well, I would hope you've issued a lot since August 2014. They are not available on your website. Then my last question is directed at the National Consumer Commission. Because I find it very, very strange indeed that only one case has been referred by the NCC in the last financial year, I think it was, 2015-2016. Now, Chairperson, you will know that we've raised several times in this committee what really seems like a very serious erosion or degradation of the role of the NCC in protecting consumers and enforcing the CPA. Now, here again, more evidence of that, with only one case referred in an entire year. So I'd really like to get an explanation of that from the NCC directly.
Thank you very much, Honourable Hill Lewis. Right, Honourable Williams.
Thank you, Chair. I've just got one question. On slide 38, you talked about ICT interventions, and I'd like to know what exactly that is. Also, what is the decision support system? And then I'll come with follow-ups depending on the answer that I get. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honourable Williams. Honourable Colonel.
Thank you, Chairperson. Can you tell me how many permanent tribunal members there are and whether they are all qualified, and if they're qualified, are they legally qualified? And then also your temporary members, how many do you have? And do you outsource when you are in trouble, you know, to other legal entities to try and to assist you with a backlog? That's the one question. The other question is, You say on slide 35 that you're experiencing serious management issues. Can you just unpack that a little bit? What sort of serious management issues do you have? And then on slide, the next slide, you say, shutdowns not done. Evidence by underspent in tribunal members. I do not understand that. If you can just explain to me what do you mean, evidence by underspent in tribunal members' fees. And then whose responsibility is it to set down? Is it the tribunal member or is it management? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Colonel. Honourable McPherson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation. I mean, I'm fascinated by slide 21 that says that speaks to a number of non-referral applications by consumers. And for me, you know, I would hesitate to guess that a number of those people have been duped into agreements that they either didn't understand from the beginning or just now simply can't afford. And these individuals are probably, you know, from sort of the lower end of the income scale and don't have the resources to be able to defend themselves against well-resourced lending companies. So my question to you is what legal assistance is provided to them? And are they able to apply for legal aid in defense of their application? Because I would assume that then the defendants, the lender, whoever that may be at the time, comes with some heavy-hitting lawyers to defend their cases. And sort of the man in the street is not going to be able to, you know, be able to speak the legal jargon in order to defend their application. So I would like to know what assistance legal-wise you provide to them, or if not, are they able to apply for legal aid? With respect to the Honourable Hill Lewis's first point about the case, is required, Chair, you will recall that meeting was held in the Good Hope Chamber, and the question was actually directed at the NCR. That we required them to furnish us all the cases by name, case numbers, and criminal cases that may have been open. And I would like to know how many of those cases that you deal with are referred for further criminal investigation, if indeed, you know, criminal acts are found. Because, you know, if one is breaking the law, surely one should be forward onto the police for further investigation. Now, with respect to the enormous turnaround time that cases take, 358 days you mentioned, with postponements, in your opinion, if you're able to give it to me, is that a deliberate attempt by the defendants to prolong the case for as long as possible, hoping that it will be struck from the roll? As so to speak, and what are you able to do to mitigate that, or are you at the mercy of the process to unfold? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable McPherson. As far as I could see, that was all of the members, am I right? I'm just looking at you. What would be useful, you've had quite an explosion of cases in the last few years, which presumably is a combination of awareness of your structure and some of the work that you're doing. But can you explain to us how you're able to manage this explosion on the case, on the resources that you've been allocated? How does that work? Because you don't appear to have done a dramatic increase on human resources, finances, or anything. So if you would look at that side, the other one is with respect to a point you made yourself that you were alerted to a particular case by the National Credit Regulator. And when the National Credit Regulator, and I'm just wanting to ensure that as much Shigara's attention is here as well was here previously,
and talking about some of the challenges they had, they mentioned the length of time sometimes that the tribunal had took. And I really liked a comment from her as well on the issue. The third thing is that when the tribunal was set up, and I think the Honourable McPherson had a point here, one was expecting cases to go much quicker and cheaper and so on, which is why we established it. So the South Africans didn't have to rush to the courts per se. Not that they couldn't if they wished to. But now with the National Tribunal having some of the challenges you've alluded to, if you can just indicate the measures in place, and also with respect to the ICT, because you've indicated you're going to put a new one in there, and our experience in the public sector and the private sector that the introduction of a new ICT architecture really puts a strain on things, and one is aware that not always are documents kept in their manual form, and so on. So I just thought perhaps you could address those three. Thank you very much. Is that all then from members? Right.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Okay, just in relation to the frustration experience and all of that, I mean, we acknowledge that we've also had issues. As I indicated, that there's been a number of factors that compounded on us, but we are been dealing with this, and we are actually placing quite close attention on managing our case forward, so as to not experience these types of issues again within the constraints that we operate in. I think what we can also do and what we've done, we also use it an outside as a learning example, and we take two lessons that we got from there. We when one plans and you think that your caseload is going to increase, I think our case at that, but even in almost in our wildest dreams, we could not really anticipate to that, but we've got a handle on it now, and going forward we want to improve. Just in relation to the big matters that you refer to, what I can tell you about the matter, the Holiday Club matter that you referred to was the Univision matter. That matter was withdrawn from the tribunal. The other matter that currently was filed by the Consumer Commission was the Eagle Trust matter, and on that specific matter, we've recently issued a condemnation judgment on that, where it specifically dealt with the issue of service. In that specific matter, one of the issues that the parties need to deal with is service on all the affected parties. So that is the aspect that they're grappling with there currently. In relation to the Lewis matter, the one matter has been set down for hearing, so we have a hearing date. And the other matter has recently, the more recently filed one, have basically now, the pleadings have closed, so it's now in the position where it needs to be allocated to a tribunal panel for purposes of a hearing. Let me have a look here about other big matters. The Nedbank matter referred to us by the NCR, as well as the ShopRite matter, both of them we set down three hearings for July. What we find with these big matters is that normally there is senior counsels involved, and you know, it's quite big legal teams. So in order also to be dates that suit all the people involved, so as to not have an unnecessary postponement, again, can become quite challenging. We also find that from a case management perspective, we can deal with these matters a bit easier if we first have a pre-hearing where the parties can then agree on what are the issues that need to be sorted out from a process perspective. So that is where those are at currently. The big ads matter, our hearing has been set down there for November. On Capitec, there's a condemnation that is currently being adjudicated on Finbond. We have a pre-hearing I see today. And they will specifically there tackle some issues around confidentiality of documents and so forth. The UBank matter has been withdrawn yesterday. I think is that as far as you know. Sorry, is there another big one specifically that I need to respond to?
There was also the the car 699.
That is the actual number that is laid down for November. Sorry, Jay. Apologies.
Sure, so just do, can I ask questions of Carrie now on what that is said?
On what has been said?
Yeah, I'm aware that the holiday club's matter was withdrawn because of the confusion around the serving of papers on the respondents. However, I'm appalled to hear that it still hasn't been refiled. So, are you saying that currently there's absolutely no filing in that case whatsoever? And why is that? If we can hear from the other parties.
Right. Because this issue has come up before. If I'm not mistaken, someone can carry files for me. I thought that was also timeshare. Or are we talking about something? Because it's been referred to me in a letter as timeshare, you see. But you called it a sort of holiday club.
Sorry, if I can just ask, why was the UBank one withdrawn?
My understanding is that UBank has been withdrawn from the tribunal yesterday because it was settled. All right. And this in relation to the question that the Univision matter, which was the Holland Club or the Timeshare matter, has not been filed for the tribunal again. Okay. All right. Then in relation to the update that I was trying to make, we will get on to that. In the meantime, as far as if any person would want to have a look at our decisions that we issue, we also publish them on the SAFLI website. And there I know they are quite up to date with keeping it there. All right. Then in relation to what a decision support system is, that is enhancement that we are currently considering for our case management system.
Currently we've got your deputy commissioner, is that Tuzi, the NCC deputy commissioner, Tuzi Mabuza, Ms. Tuzi, that you wanted to come in on the holiday clubs come timeshare.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the question asked. In terms of the timeshare, yes, we have withdrawn both cases that we have filed with the Commission with the tribunal because they were found wanting in terms of procedures and the setting. The reason why we haven't filed them as of now is because now, although the practice is continuing, which we cannot go back to the very same cases that we had actually presented, so we had to find on new matters. So we are busy with those matters right now. We have already again issued our own investigation certificates, again, different to all parties. And I think based on the lessons that we have learned now, we are trying to do it better so that we serve all of them individually. We look at the practices individually, and we'll be doing this in the course of the financial year as we are busy now. Once we have approved the investigation, we will continue. And the other matter is that on the number of cases that we are filing, it's not that all the matters that we investigate will all of them end up at the tribunal. If during the investigation, when we serve the investigation report back to the respondent, and then we get an agreement wherein now, especially if it's a reactive complaint, wherein it's based on a practice, and the party is willing to settle or maybe to give the consumer the recourse that they want. In most cases, if it's not continuing, it's a once-off, then you settle on the matter. So there's no need actually to proceed and go to the tribunal. But because now of the filing requirements that changed in September, an investigation was based on the process, on the understanding that we had then with the filing requirements. So all the cases that were ready by then before the rules changed, we had to hold them back, pull them back, so that we show the inadequacy that we had with our filing requirements. So with the education, as the DDG has said, that when rules or the legislation changes, there has to be education. So we had to go back and re-educate ourselves so that we don't find ourselves now filing and having to withdraw. And then with the help of our the tribunal, we will be presenting this up. I think we can be asked these questions during the course of the maybe by September to see if maybe there are no changes so that we withdraw the processes that we've got in terms of the weaknesses that we had experienced.
Thank you.
come back to the tribunal itself?
Okay, then I am at the question on our decision support system and what we mean by that. We are currently looking at enhancements to our case management system that will assist us with some of the, you can call it factual checks in relation to debt arrangement matters, because that's of course the bulk filing matters. But these things I am referring to, for example, is an interest rate above or below a specific limit set for that type of agreement. If a credit agreement works out as set forward in the proposal, whether the consumer would still be, from an age perspective, within a, to bad language, will he have to basically work under 110 to be able to repay what is put forward in a specific rearrangement. So those types of basic checks, we are looking at ICP to see how they can assist us with those checks so that when we adjudicate on matters, we already have an alert to tell you, you know, in this matter, you need to look at, for example, the age of the consumer. In that specific matter, what is put forward, the consumer will have to repay more than what he can afford. So that is what the decision support aspect of it will all be about. My next question I had here was about the tribunal members. All our tribunal members are appointed on 5-year terms. So from that perspective, they're not permanent as such as it's contract appointments, but we do have 3 full-time tribunal members, and then the other 10 of our tribunal members are part-time tribunal members. Our 3 full-time tribunal members includes our chairperson, who of course then also have other responsibilities over and above adjudication. In relation to qualifications, the National Credit Act basically indicates that our tribunal members must be from diverse backgrounds. So from that perspective, they are suitably qualified. We have all kind of professions within the tribunal. There are some tribunal members with a legal background, there are others with an economic background. So depending on what a specific case would need, the panels can then be put together with the relevant expertise. Then what in relation to outsourcing tribunal member perspective, unfortunately, we cannot get more on a temporary basis than those members that are appointed by the president. So of course we face challenges there from an education perspective, because we only have a certain amount of time that we can work with. In relation to other human resources on the administrative side, what we've done in the interim to help us dealing with our cases, on the one hand we've utilized youth, young students, who while they are studying, they can work part-time at the tribunal. So on the one hand, you know, we assist them with getting some remuneration to pay towards the fees or the living expenses, whatever they may need for, to help us with some of the more administrative type tasks on our cases. Of course, as with any contingent employee, that even though they greatly assist us, it also comes with its own challenges. You know, on the one hand, there's an additional supervisory burden on our permanent staff, but and then on the other hand, also you can have some challenges with the accurate capturing of information, and so because of the part-time nature of that solution, which is why, as I indicated, where we are right now, we will have to get a bit more of a structured type resource going forward. Don't want to say a permanent resource as such, because you see with the case of this also through the flood rate, it doesn't help that you put people to permanent positions and then ultimately our caseload might not support it, but definitely a longer term contract type appointment to assist us through this phase. In relation to the management issues that we face, as I've indicated, there were a number of aspects in relation to the management of our cases and the tracking of our cases. These are, for example, as we've seen some instances, I'm also including the, you know, inaccurate decisions and reporting, not setting down our non-debt arrangement matters as quickly as we would have liked it to happen. But you see, even if you look at our process, we might say we want to do it within 175 days, but if in between the different steps, you add a few days here and you add a few days there,
it takes quite a bit of running costs in other areas to then try and meet that overall timeline, and then often, as you've indicated, we will then go outside of that norm. As I said, that whole process is currently the subject of disciplinary inquiries, so I would not at this stage want to give more specific detail than that, so as to not prejudice our other processes. We've also done currently an external review. Well, it's still in process also, where we are specifically also looking at the performance information of some of our previous periods, so that we can, on the one hand, also get some view on the actions of that, and also determine in relation to the performance of relevant individuals, where that is said. We have not yet received the report in that specific matter, so that is also still ongoing. Next question was about what I meant when I said that sit-down is not done, and that is evident by the understanding of tribunal member fees. Our part-time tribunal members get remunerated for work actually done. So from that perspective, whether we have 20 part-time members or 50 part-time members, that does not as such have an impact on our budget. We only pay tribunal members when they actually work. So, of course, if we do not set down cases and they do not come for hearings, then they don't charge us fees. So, if we look at on our financial statements, for example, for this year and the previous, what we spend on our tribunal member fees is actually lower than the previous year. We've got, I think it's about 20% lower than our previous year figures on our tribunal member fees. Now, that would be, part of that will be because of other interventions that we put in place, for example, our motion court, where we hear more matters during a day, but part of that is also because for a period in the year we did not have so many set downs as we would have liked. And then responsibility to set down matters, that is the responsibility lies within the registrar's office, with our registrar who's responsible for our cash management process. Then on the question about the legal assistance and how we help consumers at our hearings, the tribunal is inquisitorial, and we take that power quite serious. There's been instances in the past where, for example, if a consumer is on the one side and the other party is represented by a legal counsel, we will actually insist that the lawyer must not use lawyer speak, but use normal plain English and explain difficult terms in plain English so that the consumer can also understand the points put forward. The tribunal members will, at the panel, they actually take quite actively part in the hearing, not to such an extent that they would now basically make a case for one of the parties, but assisting a party with the process. They will explain to a consumer, this is now where we are at in the process, you must now do ABCD. So we require, for example, to give us a summary of why you are here today, they will help you through. If witnesses are all being brought before the tribunal and the panel sees that a consumer is struggling to, for example, put his case to the witness, the tribunal will assist with that. So it's quite an active process. And because of how our process is set up, legal assistance is actually not necessary at the tribunal. The panel do help you along. Similarly, outside of the hearing process, when it comes to filing, the registrar's office will assist consumers and unrepresented parties with their filings. Our form is also quite indicative about what exactly you need. We've got little tick boxes where you can tick, have you added this document or added that document, and necessary. If you require any assistance over and above the form, telephonically or in person, our tribunal member staff will assist with that.
To remind you, we've got 5 minutes to serve this data as a members. We're not having a tea break. We're going to just have a run of the tea break. Tea is outside. So do proceed, and just back to in the issue of the guidelines as well that you were referring to.
Yes, and that's of course what we are going to do going forward, especially because we are going to phase down the assessments now about debt arrangement matters, but also on non-debt arrangements where we will still be doing our assessments, we are going to issue like a guidance note to parties, where we will explain to them in relation to how to file the tribunal, what you should do at the hearing, what you should expect. So that's work in progress, and currently there's no legal aid at the tribunal because it's ultimately not necessary. With the support tools at the tribunal, it the party should be able to bring this case forward. There was a question about criminal investigations and what we do. That is something that the regulators will have to respond to, because from our perspective, we hear the cases are brought to us, and they are not criminal cases as such. Then, in relation to the postponement and whether that's a deliberate attempt by defendants and what we can do to mitigate, I think, of course, as with anything, one can have your suspicions to fail that way. But what the tribunal can do, and that's what we do, is each one of these applications, we actually consider the merits. And if there's merit in granting an application, then it is granted. If there's no merit, then the tribunal refuses it. As an adjudicator on a matter, that's the best the tribunal can do in relation to that. then how we manage with the resources that have been appointed in relation to the explosion on our cases, Chairperson, in relation to this, and basically been a number of interventions that we've applied. As you said, on the one hand, we've increased our expectations on tribunal members and staff, so that we can basically get more within the time available. So from a financial perspective, that is assisted a bit on the budget side. We've also implemented the motion courts, which assists us in dealing with more matters. We've issued quite a large number of orders through our motion courts. We hear more than one non-DRA matter on a day. Our fine fee has increased, so that has assisted us. As I said, we will also be looking at future ICT. This decision support is quite important for us to implement our first management, which would be a system in terms of which the filing fees get paid online and we record it directly in our system that will sit the back end with reducing the time our resources have to spend on recon all these fees. And then, of course, always looking at cost saving. For example, around traveling and digitalization, if we more than one matter on a day, members only need travel once to deal with, for example, three matters. And then, of course, towards the end of 2015-16, we've received an additional grant from DPI to the value of $3 million, which will assist us with dealing with these cases far with us. So I think that was that question. Then, as also in the length of time that might take with the tribunal, I think going forward, we are keeping quite a close eye on these things. So, in as far as to the extent that it's in the control of the tribunal, we will be reducing the turnaround on our cases. Of course, as I said, some of these things are not within the control of the tribunal. For example, if parties go to the High Court, and with those we will have to deal as and when they happen. Then, Chairperson made a comment about the strain that new ICT interventions can place on an organization when you implement. I think in 2015-16 we really saw that in our environment also, and that is why I said we are anticipating some future enhancements to our system, and we will really be placing quite a bit of focus on change management around that, and also on service level management, so that we ultimately have less user adoption issues, which then again on our impact. I think I've answered all the questions. One last standing. Yes. I spoke.
Do you want to close the section, but I've got the Honourable Hill Lewis and the Honourable Williams.
Thank you. I just want to come back to the NCC. Well, question to both of you. Firstly, I understand the explanation, Ms. Deputy Commissioner Mabuza, but I don't really accept it. For me to suggest that you've only found one case in an entire year to refer to the NCT is evidence to me of a huge lack of effort. I mean, we all know, every one of us knows that there are many, many more cases out there of unacceptable practice against consumers. And in fact, it's evidenced, and this is where I'll come to you, NCT, it's evidenced by the fact that 137 consumers have taken your non-referral notice and gone to NCT anyway. And I'd like to know from you, NCT, how many of those 137 have you ruled in favor of? Because each one of those cases would suggest that, in fact, the NCC should have acted on that case and not issued it on referral. So I'd be interested to know how many of those 137 cases you ruled in favour of. And obviously we know that 137 cases is absolutely minuscule in comparison to the number of questionable and legal practices that consumers suffer on a daily basis in this country. So for me, it's unacceptable that the NCC is so inactive in that space. Then, if you could update us, Anne, on the Capfin recommending case. Then the Lewis matter, is that, can you just give us the date of that hearing? You said it's been set down for hearing, and if you could just remind me, are those hearings open to the public? They are open to the public, great, I look forward to that one. Then on page 25, the matters referred to you by the National Credit Regulator. You said that 25 matters have been finalised during 2015 and now. Of those 25 matters, do you remember roughly offhand how many you ruled in favour of the NCR in and how many you ruled against the NCR in?
Honourable Williams. Thanks, Chair. I just want to do a follow-up question on your decision support system. I just want to know, I take it somebody is doing this job at the moment, a person is doing this job at the moment, and then that person will stop doing that job and the computer will kick in with this job. I'd like to know what happens in the future, and I'm basing this on my experience in other portfolios, what happens in the future when the system crashes? Will that mean you won't have that anymore? The system will grind to a halt. When you replace humans with computers and then the computer system crashes, you have a serious problem on your hands. And I just want to know if you've got a contingency plan for that. Thank you.
No, thank you very much. In relation to the NCC and one matter that was, I'm not sure if the right word is declined or turned back because of insufficient information. But I was just trying to recall the issue itself. It was sent to me by a member of the committee, though. But if all members would listen, they may hear what I'm saying. And it went to the NCC and was sent back because it was incomplete. And then earlier on, there was a reference to, we had to send X back, everything wasn't there. If you follow a proactive practice in some of these cases where you're able to alert, what I thought the guidance note would also do, alert people as to what was essential for the application to be moved and how soon do you communicate with those applicants to say, unfortunately, we can't take this as it is incomplete and you need X document. In other words, there's more tiny things that seem to hold up a case. Thank you.
In relation to the first question about the 137 matters, just correction there. Of them, 23 cases are non-referrals in terms of the CPA. The rest are other cases, for example, review of sale, all of those ones are put together to make the 137 figure. And in relation to the 23 cases and which ones we found for and against consumers, that's something I think we'll have to do with a written reply. I don't have that figure offhand to that level that I can give you an outcome. Yeah, so that I'll do in a written reply. The Captain Sam View matter that you've also asked for, where that one is at, that matter we are... Okay. Then the date of the Lewis hearing. Just give me a moment. It's on the 28th of July this year. And it is open to the public. Okay. How many in?
Writing because we're running out of time. We're not? You know, there are a number of unanswered questions. If you would, with the committee secretary, identify these and let us have it by Tuesday.
That we can.
That be in order? And also the other issue of
you know, which we didn't ask a question, but it would be useful to know what your human resource strategy is in terms of profiling. On stage, you did have a human resource manager who was a black African, I understand, and now he or she has left. But we get this, because when we talk about transformation, we're trying to do this broadly and in a fair manner. So if you don't have business plans for it, it could happen unexpectedly. And the other thing is human, the workplace itself. I understand you don't have a union, so what do you have?
I just had one more burning question. I just want to ask, where did the legal advice come from that simply because the Holiday Club matter had been rejected for filing for a technical issue on the serving of papers, you could no longer use those underlying transgressions in the new case? Because my understanding, I'm not an advocate, but my understanding is that that is not normal court practice. I mean, if you make a technical error in the filing of court papers, that doesn't nullify the underlying transgression that has taken place. So I don't understand that the NCC's explanation for the unbelievable delay in the case.
I do want to get that in writing. A quick, you know, 1 minute response now will do. But the rest back in writing, thanks.
On the matter, there were the manner in which we have clubbed the holiday clubs together. We were investigating an industry wide. So in this case, if we wanted to break it down to specific holiday clubs and then deal on specific matters. There are matters that will be going directly to the tribunal, and there will be matters in terms of the contraventions that would have to be adjudicated to by the court. So we had to separate the two. Hence, now we are trying to untangle them so as we deal with those matters in the different forums separately, but I'll put that in writing.
Thank you very much. Last comment, Mr. Blanche.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. The NCR still needed to respond that to the captain matter. I think it's quite a big, important matter.
Thank you, Honourable Chairman. With regards to the, you know, Captain matter, we've reached a settlement with Captain. We needed to get redress for consumers, you know, speedily, because we felt that a number of those credit agreements had already been had been paid off, right? Yeah, a number of those credit agreements had been paid off in any event, so consumers were not going to get you know, any more, you know, redress if we had left it as a tribunal. Thank you.
No, thank you. We, you know, we members, we are going to have to call some folks back, and the, I understand the, just 1 moment, I do see that, that haven't we got the National Credit Regulator coming next? The CCI. All right, raise the question so it can be answered in writing.
I just want to make sure I understood Ms. Mochahara correctly. Are you saying that the consumer has paid off the loan, or has the loan has been written off?
Thank you, Chair. Can I respond to that question? Look, I mean, if you make an allegation of reckless lending,